Welcome to episode 142 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Following on from last week, today we continue to trace my steps as I travelled around the Yachiho Highlands in a recent trip out there, and I share some of the images that I brought back with me, intermingling some tips on decisions that I made while photographing the area. As I mentioned last week, some of the focus of this series is on achieving a relatively deep depth of field, something that I don't do a lot of in my more recent work, but for landscapes and this sort of photography, it's definitely necessary. And I was doing that quite a lot through these few days. If you didn't listen to last week's episode number 141, I suggest that you go back and listen to that one first before listening to this, just so that you can get an idea of where we are and what I did and why I was out here in the first place. I'll touch on a few of these things briefly again today, but I think it would still be better if you listened to them in series. The weather forecast for the weekend that I was out in the Yachiho Highlands or the Yachiho Kōgen area had been basically rain on the Saturday but clear on the Sunday, which was one of the reasons why I'd come out here at this time. The rain on the Saturday was going to give me some nice mist, which was what we looked at last week, but also a nice blue sky can be nice as well. So, as we'll see in a moment, the clear day for Sunday was also something I'd been looking forward to. We got up at the crack of dawn on the Sunday, the 1st of June, and headed back up the road towards where we'd photographed at the end of the first day. As we climbed the mountain in our car, we stopped a couple of times to take in the fresh air and just have a look around. As I mentioned last week, part of the reason for this trip was really just to get away from Tokyo and have some relaxing time with my significant other. The mountain air was as sweet as ever, and as we stood and we got out at the same place that we'd shot those last few landscapes that we looked at the end of episode 141, and basically, we could see all of the houses down in the valley this time. Lots of greenery, but you could see that the bottom of the valley was actually populated now, looking more like a valley than the lake that it had looked like at the end of yesterday. I shot a few images on the way up as the sun rose, but even though it had it only just really come above the horizon, it was very strong, and I didn't really much like the images that I'd got. There was a lot of haze, a lot of bright haze in the distance, and things didn't really turn out how I'd perhaps hoped. I wanted to get back to that place that I'd shot at the previous day, though, before the sun got too high in the sky. So bearing in mind that we had to stop to take in the mountain air from time to time, I was also trying not to spend too much time getting up here. As I turned off onto the smaller road that takes you down to where the rhododendron that I'd photographed the previous day was, almost immediately we saw a long line of cars parked at the side of the road. And I've seen this before, and on a Sunday morning in the mountains it can mean only one thing, and that's that there's something to photograph nearby. I pulled over to see what it was, and I grabbed my camera before even finding out what it was. Just grabbed my camera and tripod and things and headed along the line of cars. And then there was like a small picket fence along the left side of the road. And as I looked through the gaps, I could see a large group of photographers gathered around the rhododendron tree that we can see in image number 1804. I'm not sure, but it was likely that this is the same tree that I'd seen in a magazine and the one that had been the reason for my visit here in May of 2007. As I said last week, I'd never found out last year, despite looking through this fence as I drove around the area, I'd never found out where the rhododendron trees actually were because I'd come a few weeks too early. The late snows had held back the flowers, and because we'd had snow in April this year as well, I came a few weeks later, and I think I just got here at the best time this year. I walked through the fence and sort of waited, well, a gap in the fence, obviously, and waited a little while for someone to move so that I could get my camera in for this shot. But now, I wasn't all that happy about shooting something that not only everyone else was shooting, but also from a position that I really couldn't choose myself. I had waited for this particular spot, you know, I'd not just sort of jumped in anywhere. I'd been waiting behind someone that I could see was in a position that I thought might make a nice photograph, and I'm quite pleased with it, but you know, it's really, it's just one of those things, you know. I'm not one for trying to shoot the same thing as everyone else, even though I had been out here having seen it in a magazine. But it's always a bit of a put off when you see so many other people shooting the same thing. I'd wanted to get a shot, though, with the bush framed by the white birch, which is why I waited at this point. And then, you know, it would have been taken a long time for me to wait for a number of other spaces that might have gotten me a good vantage point or a good angle. So I just didn't bother at this particular point. And, you know, I really wanted to get away to the next location. I shot this with my 70-200mm f2.8 lens at 70mm with an exposure of 1/6 of a second at f11 with ISO 100. I dropped back, allowing a patient pensioner to jump in and start shooting from the spot that I'd been in for a few minutes, and I got back into my car and drove down the hill away. And the image number 1805 is the next one that we're going to take a look at. And here you can see that I'd made my way back to the hillside with the bush that I'd photographed on, towards the end of the previous day. There was a beautiful blue sky with some nice wispy clouds blowing across, and it was really just a wonderful morning. It was coming up to about 7 a.m. when I shot this first one that we're looking at here. So the sun started to climb pretty high in the sky at this point, but still it was low enough to not sort of white the sky out very much. There was a lot of blue that registered, and so I was pretty happy with this. The rhododendron that I'd shot yesterday was still in shade in the most part at this point, but that was fine. I shot this with my 16-35mm f2.8 lens at 19mm, again with f11 as the aperture, and this was for 1/10 of a second at ISO 100. As I mentioned last week, with wide-angle lenses like this, the hyperfocal distance is just a few meters from the front of the lens or from the camera, and even with relatively wide apertures, you get a lot of depth of field. But I decided to stop down a little more to get things really sharp from the closest grasses to the furthest trees, as we look through the trees and see the leaves and on the trees and the branches in the distance. I hadn't focused on the hyperfocal distance for this as well, as there really wasn't anything so close to the front of the shot that warranted it. And with f11, I knew I was going to be okay again. I considered using my 24mm tilt shift lens here too to correct the trapezoidal effect. I always get my, tongue around that. The trapezoidal effect a little, and which is that effect, you know, where the things, tall objects sort of lean inwards when you look up at them with these wide-angle lenses. I wanted to go a little wider than 24mm though, and although I could have probably stepped back a little, and there were, you know, there were other trees there that started to get into the way, and you know, I just wasn't really too worried about the leaning of the trees, and I think it can sometimes help to show the tallness and everything as well, because we're used to seeing this effect from lenses. I wanted also today to mention that I used my Singray color combo filter for this shot, which basically combines an LB warming polarizer and the LB color intensifier in one filter, basically. It's a beautiful filter, and one that, although I've owned for more than 6 months now, I've really not had a chance to use that much until now. The LB in the names stands for lighter and brighter. Because these filters are generally lighter and brighter than their predecessors, they've got this LB on there, so that you know that they're the newer range from Singray. This particular one, I think it said that it was lighter by two-thirds of it, or one stop. What was it? It's lighter by one stop. But I think that they said that this lens, this filter is only going to cut out two-thirds of a stop, which is really quite good when you consider that normal polarizers they'll cost you two stops. I couldn't find this on the website, though, when I looked earlier. I thought I'd seen that before. I couldn't find evidence that that's true today, but I'm pretty sure that that's what it is. So you can see that it doesn't really darken things down. A normal polarizer doesn't do that because you just increase the exposure, but it does give a really nice sort of warm look, and the colors are great, and the sky just has a very natural but deep blue feel there. So I'm pretty pleased with it now that I've actually managed to use it in a situation where I can really see the effect. Be warned, though, that this filter does cost a fair amount. The 82mm thin frame version for wide-angle lenses that I bought for the 16-35 f2.8 lens, which is the version 2, so it has an 82mm filter thread, this actually costs $450, so it's definitely not a cheap filter by any stretch of the imagination, costing probably around three times the amount that even the best polarizers that I can buy here in Japan would normally cost. So, it is really a high price item. So, I think you've got to think a little bit hard before you fork out that amount for one filter. For the extra light, though, and the image quality, I think it's worth it, and I'm looking forward to sort of starting to get my money's worth out of it now, in situations like this. Before we move to the next image, I want to quickly note how bent. I want you to sort of look at the image and note how bent the tree is on the left of the frame here. There are four trees growing almost from the same spot, but the one on the left here is not bending inwards to the, along with that trapezoidal effect as much as the others are, the other three. Just keep that in mind, and then, we'll now want to look at image number 1806. Here we see four trees that appear to be growing almost straight up away from the lens, but in actual fact, they're all growing outwards slightly, sort of fanned out, including the one on the left, which we just looked at, which is growing out at quite an angle. This is working against the effect of the wide-angle lens as we're looking up into the trees. So it's basically straightened itself out again, which I thought was pretty cool. For this shot, to emphasize the feel of the height of the trees, I set my camera on my tripod at its lowest height with none of the leg extensions extended. I used my angle finder on the back of the finder there, on the viewfinder, to basically allow me to look down into the camera from above, which, because of the angle of the camera, was basically like looking almost horizontally into the camera. And that was just really to stop me from having to lie down on the still wet, but also more concerning the very thorny forest floor. I used an aperture of f11 for 1/15th of a second at ISO 200 for this. I was using ISO 200 because I'd turned on the highlight priority feature of the 1DS, because, as you can see, there are, there's a lot of shadow on parts of these tree trunks, but also the parts that are in full sun are very white as well, and I wanted to I wanted to try and get as much dynamic range as possible without those whites blowing out totally. So I turned on the highlight priority feature for this shot. I was shooting at 16mm for maximum sort of looking up at tall objects effect. Again, the Stingray colour combo helped me to give, to get a really lovely blue sky, but also, with nice rich greens. I angled the camera so that I could see the trees starting to sort of spread out at the top, the canopy of the trees starting to spread out at the top of the frame. But I also wanted to include that line of trees along the bottom, the distant trees, to kind of anchor the shot and give it more balance. I'd focused on the tree trunk in front of me using autofocus, and that's basically, I was estimating about a meter from the camera again, and being aware that f/11 aperture is gives you a hyperfocal distance of about a meter in front of the lens. So it was basically just sort of, again, like I said last week, keeping hyperfocal distance in mind, but not really getting out a calculator and working it all out to make sure. I just know that these they're about the distances, because using the lens quite often, and you tend to get to understand your equipment, and if you bear things like hyperfocal distance in mind when you're shooting, it kind of becomes second nature, so you don't have to worry about it too much in the field. I knew that through doing that, basically the bark on the trees from the very, very bottom there right up into the top of the shot with all of the leaves and everything in the distance was all going to be in nice sharp focus. Shortly after this, we decided to go back to the hotel for breakfast. I love on these trips when you're able to sort of get out and photograph for a few hours from dawn and then sort of go back steadily to the hotel before breakfast, eat by around 8 o'clock and then, set out again. It feels like you're really sort of making the most of the day when you do this. And one problem that I had though, this time was that I'd had too little sleep the few nights before, coming away, and then getting up at 4:30 on this day, it was all sort of starting to take its toll. After a steady breakfast, what I decided to do was to just, the sun was already pretty harsh by that time as well. So I decided to just have another hour's sleep before heading out again, and that's exactly what I did. Feeling a little bit better, we set out again from the hotel at around 10:30 a.m. and we're heading out to take a walk around the park that I'd visited on my own, by myself, the previous year. It was a nice walk, pretty tiring. I'd carted my 600mm f4 and my 300mm f2.8 lenses all around the park in the rucksack. And, it's up and downhill quite a lot. I've really sort of worn myself out a lot doing that. And normally I'm happy to do that when there's some opportunity to use the gear. Last year when I was here, I'd gotten some really nice bird shots down towards the bottom of the valley that the park's basically in. And I was hoping that I'd be in luck again. But when I got to the spot where I'd seen the birds the previous year, after a relatively long wait, and also noticing that the foliage was actually a lot further along this year, and it wasn't as scenic as it had been when I was here last year. There's a lot of sort of overhanging green and that, and it just, the birds that I waited a reasonably long while, I can't remember how long, there were no birds showing up, so it didn't seem as though I was going to be as lucky this year. My other half was also getting a little bit impatient, although still enjoying the mountain air. So, trying hard to keep this a relaxing and relatively stress-free weekend, we decided to move on. This meant that I'd pretty much carted the 600mm around with me for nothing, which made it a lot more tiring than if I'd got a few good shots with it. Kind of a psychological thing there, I guess. Anyway, I shouldn't grumble because I need the exercise. We picked up some snacks at the hotel before we left, and we decided to sort of sit and just have lunch on a bench near a pond in the park. As we approached the pond, I saw that there was some nice fresh green leaves on the hillside that ran up the edge to the left of the lake as we faced it. And it was probably going to make for a nice reflection shot if the breeze would let up for long enough to sort of take the edge off the water. I chose a bench that would make it easy enough for me to set up my camera, waiting for the breeze to die down, and still have a relaxing sit down for lunch, kind of killing two birds with one stone. After getting the exposure right and thinking of a few possible compositions, we ate lunch and waited. The breeze kept up though, and a good 30 minutes or so had passed probably, and I didn't look as though my luck was going to be in again. Then after I was on, you know, I knew that I'd probably used my last just another 5 minutes sort of begging thing, and just as we were about to go, the breeze died, and I was able to capture image number 1808. You can see that this is not exactly a mill pond type reflection, but the trees on the bank have reflected nicely against the slightly agitated surface of the pond, making a kind of painterly effect. And this was just what I was hoping for. I shot this with my 70-200mm f2.8 lens at 90mm, again at f11. F11 seems to be almost like a theme that ran through this long weekend. There's actually a good reason for that, especially with the 70-200mm, which we'll get to in a short while when we look at the next few pictures. Anyway, on the composition of this shot, I basically, as you can see, have cut off all traces of the hillside itself, relying totally on its reflection to make up the image. At the very top of the shot, though, I've included what looks like some dead tree stumps that were jutting out of the water. This gives us something in the shot that we can actually focus on and that's totally sharp. And they also have their own reflections in the water, so we can see where at least some of these reflections are coming from. I shot a vertical and horizontal version of this image and uploaded both into my online gallery at martinbaileyphotography.com. We don't look, we're not going to look at both of them today, basically because they're very similar. But if you do want to check it out, there'll be a link that will show you all 31 images that I uploaded from this long weekend. Come by if you're interested. After bagging this shot at the pond, we started to climb up out of the valley, and that's basically, that there's a number of tracks that go through this park. It's kind of semi-natural. And, the longest one, or the longest two tracks, I think they are, actually take you right down into the valley. And then this one, you walk back up quite a way around through the woods. And basically, we'd stopped. We kept stopping every so often, partly to catch our breath, but also just to see if we could spot any of the birds that were singing us along the trail. We saw a few, but a lot of the singing birds are quite small, and they were just too far away, and they also move pretty quickly, so it's really not possible to get a decent shot of these, not in a sort of an afternoon stroll, sort of situation. You need to really set up and spend a lot of time before you can get shots of these small guys, so we decided to just keep going for the most part. But I did make a recording of the song that had played us through the park for the most part of the day, and I just wanted to really just play a quick segment of that now. And you can hear sort of the running water in the park as well in the distance, that kind of accompanies the song of the birds. So just take a listen to this for a few moments. After our walk in the park, we decided to take a drive of about 20 kilometers to a nearby town called Tateshina. And Tateshina is basically, it's where a lot of people have their weekend retreats, and quite a nice little town. It wasn't the town that I was interested in, though. It was a waterfall that basically, the name of the waterfall basically translates as Big Waterfall. It's about a 10-15 minute walk from a nearby car park. And, you know, we'd found the car park and basically we're going to have a wander down there. And as we started to, to walk through, we noticed that we were going through this really just amazing forest that was sort of stretching off up the hillside to the right. We're actually not going to take a look at the waterfall shots today. We'll get onto those next week. They are online though, and so if you want to take a sneak preview, be my guest. But basically, I just wanted to look at a few more images today of these forests, and then go into a little bit more detail about the focusing stuff and the depth of field that I've been alluding to. The first one though, let's take a quick look at image number 1810. As you walk along the path down towards the falls, as I say, pretty much the whole side of the hill to the right, as you're walking down there, is just this wonderful expanse of forest. The amazing thing about this forest is that all of the trees that are there, that are growing up from there, all of them seem to be like growing over or around rocks. Pretty much all of the forest floor is just fallen rocks. And, from the small gaps between the rocks, the trees are just growing up there. They almost all seem to have grown out of from these rocks at whatever angle they can. And then they start to straighten up as best they can and head skywards. This maybe is because the rocks, this sort of leaning thing is maybe because the rocks are like slowly slipping down the hill as well, but I'm not sure about the reasons for that. Again, here I used f11 as the aperture, and I got my camera down very low, looking up across the rocks. I was always going to be looking up this hill, of course, it's a hill and I'm at the bottom of it, but getting down nice and low helps to emphasize the feeling of looking up at the steep hill, and it sort of emphasizes the steepness of the hill. The canopy of the trees and the angle of the sun now meaning most of the hillside is in shadow, meant that the shutter speed for this shot needed to be 0.6 of a second, just over half a second. Let's look at one last shot for today, and I'll explain the depth of field thing that I keep going on about. The image that we want to look at is number 1811. I've mentioned hyperfocal distance a number of times this last week and, in the last two episodes, this one and last week's, and how we can use it to get what is called pan focus, which means that everything from the foreground to the furthest thing in the distance is in focus. In this shot, I focused on that trunk of that big tree in the foreground, maybe just over a meter from the camera. This again, with the focal length of 16 millimeters, is going to be roughly hyperfocal distance. When I look at this image at 100%, though, I can literally see all of the hairs on the moss at the very bottom of the frame. And, that's really the closest thing that's been recorded to the camera. And also, I can see twigs and leaves on branches on the furthest trees. All of this is in sharp focus. There is a little softness around the edges caused more by the physics of the lens than depth of field. This is the second version of the 16-35mm f2.8 lens, and it is sharper around the edges than the original, but still, it gets a little bit soft when used wide open at 16mm. You might be wondering why I've been going on about f11 and why I don't just sort of stop down to f22 or smaller for the lenses that support it. But basically, this is the point that I wanted to make. Some of you will have heard of diffraction. Diffraction is what happens when waves hit an obstacle. This can be sound waves and water waves, among others, but with an optical lens, we're obviously talking about light waves. The obstacle being hit in this instance is the aperture. As we close down the aperture more and more, the amount of diffraction is increased. There's a point with all lenses where stopping down the lens's aperture no longer makes the image sharper, and continuing to stop down past that point actually can start to make the image more blurred. In my experience, the 70-200 f2.8 lens from Canon does not get any sharper after f11, which is one of the reasons why I use f11 so much when I want a lot of depth of field. If the subjects that you want to focus on are far enough away, sticking to f8 is more advisable, because many lenses are sharpest at f8, especially the cheaper lenses. If I want a lot of depth of field, though, and the subjects are relatively close, then I often, especially with the 70-200mm, rarely go past f11, though I will on occasion go to f16, even though I understand that this is rarely going to make anything any sharper. With the 16-35mm, I find that there is actually a little more sharpness that you can get by going down further than f11 to f16, but it's rarely necessary, because wider angle lenses have a much more deeper depth of field anyway, even at sort of f8 and f11. If you don't believe me on this, or you want to find out for yourself what the optimum apertures on your own lenses are, find a scene with lots of detailed objects, both close and in the distance, and hopefully some in the middle there, and just take some test shots. Use a tool like Barnack, which I'll link to in the show notes, to find out what the hyperfocal distance is for any set focal length that you'll shoot at, and you can manually focus your lens to that point, just shoot away. If you're not too worried about the foreground and just want to see how things sharpen up, then you can always just auto-focus on the scene and, just fire away. Try stopping down the aperture in full stops from, say, f8 through f11, f16, f22, 32, etc. Not many lenses go past f32, and some only go down as far as f22. And basically, if you start to go through those, you'll see what happens. And if you want, you can do this by starting from the whole range. If it's an f2.8 lens, start from there, go up through f4, f5.6, and then on to f8, etc. I find that as I shoot with various lenses, though, you really do get a feel for the best apertures and their optimal sharpness. And also, with a lot of the work that I'm doing being very wide, using very wide apertures most of the time, and trying to obtain as shallow a depth of field as I can, you also get a feel for how far you can open up a lens and it still stays sharp. So, all of these things, just as they say, practice makes perfect. So you can learn in the field, which is a lot of the way I've done it. But, if you do want to sort of really get a feel for this, then setting up a little bit of a test and running through your images is a good thing to do. And it might save you sort of messing things up in the field as well, if you get all of this down in theory and then in practice beforehand. So once again, I hope you've enjoyed this virtual tour in the Yadjiho Highlands. We'll continue next week and finish up next week, looking at a few more shots, including those waterfalls that I just talked about. If you've been in the forum at martinbaileyphotography.com over the last few days, you'll have no doubt noticed that I have updated the forum software to version 3 of PHPBB. I've also changed the theme of the website, moving away from the orange to the black, orange on black, and now really going to be using predominantly blue. And I've still got some graphics to update, but I would have liked to have done all of this and then just blasted it out there and really surprised you, but I really couldn't wait any longer to get the forum updated. because I've been wasting a lot of time recently deleting spammers who sort of register with the sort of web addresses in their profiles that I don't really want to subject everybody to. So I've been doing a lot of deleting of those recently. I think there was probably just a robot that could just kept coming along and somehow figuring out how to get past the gotcha image thing that you have to type in as well. But I was also hoping for better administration tools with the latest version of the board, and really just hoping that it would be better at keeping out those unscrupulous spamming pond life types. So far it seems to have worked. These accounts, I was getting them about 20-30 a day, and right now there hasn't been any for the last few days. I'm touching wood here. I don't know if this is luck or just a coincidence, but since updating, things are looking a bit better, and it's also made it easier to go through and just blast out a lot of the old accounts that are similar to that I could never really find. I've also decided to try the site without the full toolbar across the top of the forum for two reasons. The first being because I'm not really sure it's necessary. Once you're in the forum, the navigation is pretty self-contained, and I've linked the new round black logo there at the top left of the page back to the top page of Martin Bailey Photography, so it's easy to get back. And also, I'm just trying to keep the maintenance of the site down. It takes a fair amount of time to sort of and a bit of messing around to get that toolbar into the forum theme, and that just slows things down a little bit when upgrading. So if possible, although I don't mind putting it back in there if people really want it, if possible I'm thinking that it's probably best just to leave it out. If you do come by and you're thinking that you really would like that toolbar to be reinstated at the top, then please just let me know and I'll think about it again. Anyway, that's it for today. You have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.